always fun on Mondays when we get to welcome Dr. Jerry Punch to the show, and we get to do so each week thanks to our friends at New Balance Knoxville, where, Doc, they've already got one of the greatest locations that you could go when it comes to customer service, that feeling that you're so welcome, and they just overwhelm you with how they look to make sure that you get exactly what you're looking for. But they've been going through an upgrade and a little remodeling.
Yeah, they have been, and they're going to be even bigger and better, and which is going to be a huge win-win for all of you who have not been by, and for others who have and want to go back and are eager to go back. You're going to walk in and see more shelf space, more varieties, more ways to see the shoes you want, and they will explain. You like these, like the great Tennessee Orange New Balance you wear intermittently. You're now wearing the stylish once a day, the upgrade. You know, you can't just take. Just walking off the cover of the magazine, John, just styling like crazy. Of course, I guess when you've been in Vegas all weekend, that happens. But
Stark Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. But the folks at New Balance of Knoxville, you know, Sharon and David, all the folks that are there will take great care of you like they do for us, and we appreciate their involvement in the community and their involvement in sponsoring this segment and our show throughout the week.
Yes, they are certainly top-notch, and you'll recognize that the moment you walk in the door. And Doc, we had Grant's question before the break, and it was just simply to take a look at how it has been a long time since we've seen a top seed, an overall top seed, win the College World Series, and Tennessee, in all likelihood, is going to be the top seed. I can't think of another team that would be right now, regardless of what happens in Hoover, just for the season that Tennessee's put together. 49-7.
Right. Yeah, wow.
It's 6 games better than any Tennessee regular season prior to. 6 games better in terms of 49 wins. 43 had been the high water mark prior to. But just amazing. In fact, only one team going into the SEC tournament has ever had more wins, and that was South Carolina at 50.
Yeah, you know, you think about the College World Series though, and I've been, you know, I've said before on this show that I was fortunate enough that my wife is from that area out there, so we would go, and that was a part of her growing up. She and her dad would go. That would be father daughter time when she was a young girl. They would go down to the College World Series when it was at Rosenblatt, and then when we started dating and went out there, we'd go every chance we'd get, go out there and go for a game or two or a day or two. And ESPN, in the early years, ESPN had a couple of suites, and we'd go up and sit in the suite and Rosenblatt and just enjoy the game, just relax as a family. And you always see somebody getting hot late in the year in a tournament or just even at the series. Some team that just goes out there and just, you don't know, they got there on a last-minute walk-off or something, may not have had the best season. They get hot, and they go off, and they win the national championship. You know, you look back over the years and see a Texas team or a Virginia team or some of these teams that got really, really that were good teams to begin with. And the question is, has there ever been a season in college baseball where a team has been this dominant in terms of just overall talent and pitching and hitting that Tennessee's had? And can someone, John, you know more about this, can someone get hot in the College World Series and give Tennessee a run for the money? Can that happen, or can the bats cool down? I was a little leery when I heard Tony Vitello's comments about the loss of Tennessee Tech and what he implied might have happened in terms of the crowd, you know, being involved. And someone said, well, you know, there's going to be a lot of people out in Omaha, so they better get used to it. But what are your thoughts about someone? Because Tennessee seems to be Tennessee and everyone else in college baseball.
Well, I do think that some of the comments that Grant made, it's probably as wide open as you could hope to see. All you have to do, Vince, I think, is point to what Fresno State did quite some time ago, but still, to me, it's the most amazing run. They were on the road, I believe, for at least a month, because they had to go on the road to make it to their conference tournament. They went straight from their conference tournament, straight from their final road trip to their conference tournament. They won that to make it to the NCAA tournament. They then went as a 4 seed into their regional. They won the regional. Then they won the super regional. Then they made it. Georgia was the team that they knocked off.
Right, 2008.
And, yeah, 2008. So Georgia had won the first game and had, I think, a sizable lead in the first 3 innings of game 2, but then Fresno State came back, got that second game, and then won the last one. It was the equivalent of a 13-16 seed winning the NCAA basketball tournament.
Their end of season record, after all that they did,
47-31 national champions.
Yeah, that's like Jimmy V winning the national championship in basketball with that team that went out, that went in as a sixth seed, I think, in the ACC tournament, and had to win the tournament, even be an afterthought to get in the NCAA tournament, and won it all by slamma jamma.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any question that, I mean, for instance, you go back to last year and the trip to Omaha. Tennessee's down 3 going into the bottom of the ninth. If they lose that game to Wright State, you then have to come out of the loser's bracket, and then you have to win twice against the team that hasn't lost.
Right.
So it does make it it's an uphill climb. So if you happen to drop a game, I think, Vince, it is as wide open as any field of 64 you could look for, just for a stumble here, and it can wreck anybody's season, anybody's regional, let alone anybody's season.
Yeah, because there's more parity, I think, in college baseball, as is the case in softball now. So look at the threat that Wright State was as a 4 seed last year.
Yeah.
Now, many said they had no business being on the 4 line, but those kind of things can happen to you. So, and here's the one thing, what Grant, our caller, what he wanted to know, and I'd love to hear, Doc, if you have any sort of theory on how it can change, is he wants to know, how can we make it more of an advantage in the postseason to reward the teams that do really well in the regular season with the way the baseball tournament is laid out?
Yeah. Yeah. You mean the conference tournaments or the NCAA tournament?
The NCAA tournament, where you go regional, super regional, and then College World Series is a neutral site.
Right.
Can you think of anything they could do?
Other than giving people a bye in the regional, and a team that dominates goes to the super regional, and you add a couple of spots. You'd have to add a couple of positions. I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. But then again, if you're a baseball coach, you don't want your team not playing.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want.
It's all about routine.
Yeah, and speaking of which, I was going to ask you. I heard some pundits, which is what a nice term I'll use to call these guys. I don't think know a whole lot about baseball, but from the Four Letter Network, talking about, if you're Tony Vitello, you know, do you, with the tournament coming up, do you consider resting some arms, some pitchers, or do you want? Are you afraid of getting out of routine, or do you really sort of twist the innings down and limit some pitches with some of your starters?
I think that with the fact that they've spent the last 3 weeks now playing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, you wanted to use Blade Tidwell going in relief twice this past series. You got to use him for 3 innings that were marvelous,
right,
by the way.
Exactly.
Perfect. 9 up, 9 down. So Blade's going to get the ball on Wednesday, and then you get to Thursday, and at that point, Vince, it's your rotation. It'll be right. Chase Dolander in Game 2, and then you've got Chase Burns, and you've got Drew Beam, and perhaps Xander Seacrest, or whoever you look at for Ben Joyce has a start under his belt
right.
for what would be the championship game.
And even if things went crazy and you needed it, or you decided, hey, let's set up the NCAA tournament regional first, and maybe we don't want to use one of those weekend arms. If you go too deep, you could even start Cam and Sewell.
I mean, you did last year.
Right. And just so many options. But no, I that's something that we've heard from callers, from fans, is are they going to bench starters?
And pundits.
And pundits.
your ever-present pundit there with the Four Letter Network.
Here's one little thing in terms of rewarding teams that do really well. The one, I don't know how much of a difference it would make, but John, this has always bothered me, is I think if you host a regional or a super regional, you should be the home team the entire time.
Okay.
And maybe that would be a little thing, but you never know if that could be a little bit of an edge. Rather, if you earned it, why do you have to flip coins and alternate home and away? To be fair, because that's what the NCAA, we know how fair the NCAA is. It's for show. reward the team.
I didn't even see you carry the soapbox in. That was well done on your part.
Well, in NASCAR, they used to have people who would win the regular season. I go back to Jeff Gordon dominating the regular season and winning the regular season points by, 100 and some points. And then you go into back what was then called the chase, and everything gets brought back to within a couple of points of each other, and he doesn't get a chance to win the championship. So the wonder was, why run so hard and play so well and race so well all year long and win these races and win the regular season when you get nothing, in the playoffs? Right. And that was a big argument among the NASCAR fans and the teams, for that matter. He said you should at least get whatever your advantage is. You should get maybe 10% of those points added to your playoff position. At least you get some perk for having dominated the regular season.
Yeah, but I think that's probably the biggest step you could take, because it is looked at, even though you have host schools, host sites, those are supposedly neutral site games. But that would be, I think, a small step to where it would recognize that if you host, then you are the home team. But even in Hoover, the top seed gets you hit last in the first game, and then after that, it's just like the NCAA tournament, who's been the home team the least.
Right.
And so it's either automatically the team that hasn't been the home team or a coin toss, as you're talking about.
And especially in baseball, when in the NCAA tournament, you guys know this, they still regionalize the sport. So it's not being set up for competitive balance where every single regional they're making equally competitive. They're taking geography into consideration. So it's going to be tougher for some than others because of the geography versus making it fair. So if fair isn't a reality, let's just slide that aside and then do what's best, what those teams earned with great regular season. Maybe it doesn't make a difference at all, but that would be one little step, I think.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. You have a question or comment for Doc, 865-656-9900, 865-656-9900. Toll free outside the area, 866-656-9900. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. He's with us until 4:30. So again, if you have questions or comments, you can get those in line. But one of the things, always enjoy getting your thoughts, your breakdowns on stuff across the sports landscape, but also always enjoy the opportunity, Doc, for you to embrace the proud papa moments. And what about Logan? He's now engaged, correct?
Yep, absolutely. Got engaged on Saturday. I didn't realize.
VFL, yeah, Logan Punch.
VFL. He loves the Vols and broke him away from the baseball game to, no, he was, this was planned, and yeah, it was special. A young girl he was engaged to, Leslie. She's a Tennessee grad and loves the Vols as well. So excited for them to be able to ask her, and even better that she said yes, because we were putting signs up, and I told my wife, I said, should I, instead of saying she said yes, I should I get some maybes ready, or I'll think about it. Yeah. Whatever, but no, she said yes, and so great moment. Had a little brief get together with family, and then he headed off to do his summer internship in Nashville having finished his second year of law school. So he's excited about that. So yeah, it was a big weekend for the Punch family.
So he was in D.C. last year, correct?
Yeah, the year before. He was in Nashville after his first year of law school. We worked for a firm over in Nashville, Lewis Thomason. He's going to go back and work for two firms this year in Nashville, splitting up 6 weeks each. My thinking is he'll probably end up in Nashville, which is a nice, easy drive for him to come to Tennessee events and games. And with Tennessee playing more and more in Nashville, that's perfect for him. So, and exciting for him. And Jesse, our daughter Jesse, was able to come here and be in as a surprise. And,
nice.
She was able to take a weekend off from NASCAR. So, she was not in Texas, and she was not supposed to be in New Hampshire. This week she's in, I think she's got a race on Saturday. She has to be in Pennsylvania, Jennerstown Speedway, and red eye back and be for the Coke 600 on Sunday in Charlotte. So she's got and I remember those days when I did that. I said, don't complain to me because I know how that works, but
right.
Yeah, she was here. And so it was a big weekend for Logan. Thanks for asking.
Outstanding. Great to hear that. Everything went as planned.
It did. And he got
so
the answer he wanted.
Him.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. So we'll get a break. We've got another half hour with Doc Punch coming up as you listen to Sports Talk. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center just west of Westtown Mall, right off of Kingston Pike. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara, sitting in for Jimmy Hyams. Dr. Jerry Punch, our guest. Doc with us for the first half of this, the second hour of the show. If you want to join the conversation, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. Toll free outside the area, 866-656-9900. Let's check in with Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Dr. Punch. You know, first of all, congrats to Logan.
Thank you.
You know, a few years ago when I met you down there at the studio, Logan came by. I think he was moving or something.
He did, absolutely. He was
a nice young man. So
thank you.
A nice story. Congrats to him. You know, this question I've got for you is kind of follow-up to last week's question when we were talking about the fact that there really isn't an IndyCar Hall of Fame. There's a NASCAR Hall of Fame and a Motorsports Hall of Fame. But if there was an IndyCar Hall of Fame, or, say, a Dr. Punch IndyCar Hall of Fame, who might be your first class of, say, five or six guys?
Oh, my gosh.
That would be in that class.
Yeah, that's hard because everyone talks about the very first race in 1911, where Ray Haroon won it, and he used something that no one ever had on car. He put a rear view mirror, you know, in the car so you could see the cars right. But I mean, I'm just thinking. Obviously, the obvious choice is you got to go. But the first class, do you go with the legends who were there before? You know, the Jimmy Clarks and those guys, or do you go Foyt, Unser, Andretti, only because of what those names have meant to the sport? You know, do you go with the guys that have won it four times in terms of a Hall of Fame that have done something no one else has done, which means you got Al Unser and Rick Mears and Foyt and now Elio Castroneves. Do you look at the three-time winners? You look at the guys. You look at the. There's so many people, you know. Yeah. Tony Hulman, you know, basically saved the racetrack from being destroyed when he bought it from Eddie Rickenbacker during when it lay there in waste during World War II, and it brought it back to life. Would there even be an Indianapolis Motor Speedway if it wasn't for Tony Hulman?
It's a hard question.
Yeah,
it really is. You brought up Ray Haroon. If I remember right, that first race, I think his time or his miles per hour was like 74 miles an hour, which in retrospect, that was pretty fast for 1911, wasn't it?
Oh, wow. That was scorching. That was scorching hot. Yeah. And so you look at those, and those guys were just sitting in those cars. If you hit something, you were going to come squirting out of there like a banana. You know, you weren't, I mean, and that's, it's, yeah, look at those early videos and for them to win that race and the flagman standing there on the track as the cars come by a few feet away. Yeah, I just think there's so much history at Indy, and I tell people, and I know you've been, Jim, but I tell people, you don't have to be a sports fan. And you certainly don't have to be a race fan. But if you're going to go somewhere, if you're going to travel in this country to see something, you know, the Indianapolis 500 needs to be on your bucket list, because just to go there one day and see the crowds, the spectacle that it is, with the music and the bands and the pre-race. I stood on that track 27 years. During the pre-race festivities for back home again in Indiana for TAPS, for the Star Spangled Banner, interviewing celebrity after celebrity, and myself and any celebrity I stood beside, including generals, would get emotional during that period. That is something that will just, it will, you will get goosebumps. And then you realize these guys are going to strap themselves in these cars at 228, and now this week 234 miles an hour, and go out there and try to win a race in one day will change your life forever.
Well, whoever came up with the expression greatest spectacle in racing knew what they were talking about, because it's more than a race. I mean, it is a spectacle. And the race that I went to, I remember it was a hot day, but when Jim Nabors sang Back Home Again in Indiana, I had chills, because it was that stirring, you know. And you'd heard it for so many years, to be there and hear it live was amazing. Let me throw out one name to you, because he's a legend, but he only won the Indy 500 once, but he's a legend. at Indy and with IndyCar racing, is he in the Hall of Fame? And that would be Mario Andretti.
Well, you know, I think that because, you know, is he in the IndyCar Hall of Fame? He's in about any Hall of Fame. But is he deserving of Indy being only a one-time winner that in 69? Or is he, but he came so close so many times. But there's only two drivers who have ever won the Daytona 500 and the Indianapolis 500, and that's A.J. Foyt and Mario Andretti. And Jimmy Johnson this year could become the third. But is Mario, he's definitely worthy of being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But as a world champion and an Indy 500 champion, well, how do you vote against him? And you know, if it depends on how many spots you have, you know, quite honestly. But the Andretti name, and if you've ever been around Mario, and I consider him a friend, when I tweet something, Mario is one of the, it's racing related, Mario is normally one of the first people to retweet it for me. And I just chuckle because he's such a wonderful human being. And how do you not like Mario Andretti? You know, having the pleasure to cover him at Indy and cover him in NASCAR and other places and away from the track, what a great ambassador. I've got to believe he'd get plenty of votes.
Well, like I said, he is a legend. The Andretti name is certainly legendary at Indy, as is the Unser name. When you think of the Unsers, the fact that that family has 9 Indy wins is incredible, isn't it?
Isn't that something? And yeah. I was blessed enough to know them all. Al was quiet, very quiet, Big Al. And Bobby was a cut up, and you never knew what he was going to do next. You never knew. Bobby was the kind of guy that came into town on Thursday, and by Friday night, he knew most of the bail bondsmen in town, because he had had a lot of fun. But on Sunday, when it came time to race, he was the guy, one of the guys you had to beat. And little Al, just what a nice young man, and just a talent. You know, I think I told the story. I was there when he lost his first Indy 500, getting he and Emerson Fittipaldi coming together on the final laps, and I met him coming out of the infield care center. We stayed on, and they punted, which they never do. World News Tonight on ABC, for me to stay and interview little Al, and he came out. And he was just class. He couldn't have been more class. And after the interview went off the air, I turned to him. I said, that answer right there, young man, will stand the test of time. You will win one of these very, very soon. And when you do, everybody's going to respect who you are and what you said today about losing it as a heartbreak loss to Emerson Fittipaldi.
Well, that is class. Great story. Well, let's hope we have a great race on Sunday. Let's hope we have good weather and a great race, because it's just something I look forward to really a whole lot every single year. Doc, I appreciate the thoughts and comments. All you guys have a great afternoon.
You
Take
too,
care.
Jim. Always appreciate it. Let's go next to Rusty. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Rusty.
Hey, guys. How we doing? I hadn't been able to call for a while, but after last night's All-Star race, I felt like I needed to call in.
Always Rocky great Punk, to hear from you.
I'm very frustrated with this tire issue. It's maddening to me. I was a long time high school football coached for many, many years. And one year we decided that in a wet weather game, we were going to use a rubber football because it was NFHS certified. We could use that and it would be easy to catch in the wet weather. The quarterback threw the ball, receiver caught it. But when he did, it literally peeled his middle finger like a banana, and he had to go have surgery to have that repaired. And you know what? I have never used another rubber football, and never will again. It scared me to death after that. I'm sitting there watching this race, and I said, "Well, this is about the 10th time this year that I've seen an issue with this silly tire, with no inner liner, and with a low profile." And it causing an issue, and you know, you had a wreck last night that took out the three front runners. And when will NASCAR say, okay, you know what, this was a bad decision. Maybe we can go with aluminum rim and go with a 16-inch or 15-inch, and go with a wider sidewall. But this ain't working, Doc. This is terrible.
Yeah, Rusty, at trying to be, which I've never been very good at, but trying to be politically correct here, I agree with you totally. I absolutely agree. 2 weeks ago when I was at Darlington, I, I stood with Stu Grant, who is the director of Worldwide for Goodyear Racing Tires. He runs the show Worldwide, and I walked up and just shook my head, and he just shook his head back. I know everybody in the sport is aware of the issue, and the drivers, I mean, the incredibly reserved drivers are trying to be as kind as possible. Bill France years ago said, if we don't have tires, we don't have racing, and not everybody wants to be involved in racing. So if Goodyear walks away, I'm not so sure we even have a sport. So I know they're trying. They're under the same gun, and there's no excuses. I mean, they're under the same gun financially and technically wise that a lot of companies are trying to just meet the bottom line. They've worked really hard to hopefully make this new tire work, but I think they didn't foresee the fact, and none of us did, that Interliner was such a saver in so many ways for over the years. Back when we had the bias flying in a radial tire, having an Interliner there was guys could cut a tire and then come down pit road, put it on and go. Now it's and I agree. Last night I felt for Kyle Busch, and I felt, you know, Ross Chastain, you know, it's Elliott, Chase Elliott. They all went out in one accident because of a cut tire, and it was nothing you could do. But I saw it several times at Darling. It happens every week, and I don't know, and it's bad on me, but I didn't ask Stu how close they were or if what this big issue was with being able to develop an Interliner. Is it the way the wheel mounts? Is it the way the wheel is built that you can't? There's no room for an Interliner in there with a low profile, it wouldn't work. The Interliner has to have a higher pressure. You probably already know this, Rusty, but the Interliner has to have about a 20-pound higher pressure than the outer liner that the tire has. So is there not enough room to have a high-pressure Interliner in there without it affecting how the tire wears or what the tire performs and flexes because it's low profile? I don't know, but I'm guessing that's what it is.
It's insanely frustrating, and I know that. I mean, you're sitting there, and a $500 tire takes out a $500,000 car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But as a fan, I just sat there last night going, "Wow, you know, there's enough controversy with all the other things that's going to happen, but." Safety needs to come first. You know, it's like I said, when I used rubber football and the kid got his finger torn out of the pieces, I never used one again because I said that's a hazard. And I sat and watched this over and over and over again, and I know they could fix it, but they won't admit they've made a mistake.
Yeah, well, I think they know. I mean, it's obvious that they know, and they're not. You know, I have a lot of faith in Jim France and Mike Helton and the guys who were there. Unlike you, that could change the football in one game. They're not in a position where they can just snap their fingers and change this because they've sort of, you know, it's what we've got. We got to make it work for this year. And I think there's a lot of ducks that are swimming under the water. Their feet are going pretty quickly. You just don't see them going. I think they're working really hard to try to fix the issue. But right now, you're right, Rusty, and it's a great point. It is a significant issue. And it's disappointing, especially with the All-Star race last night.
Do appreciate the call, Rusty. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, just west of Westtown Mall, right off of Kingston Pike. Before we get back to the phones, Vince, you wanted to hear what Doc had to say about something that certainly has generated headlines since the end of last week.
That's right, and it still continue to be discussed, and more quotes continue to come out, but we all know the backstory. Nick Saban criticized Jimbo Fisher, and then Jimbo Fisher had an unreal response. What would you make of all that went down with that exchange with those two former friends, it seems like?
Well, what a fabulous reality series that is. Hell, who needs the Housewives of Jersey when you got the coaches of the SEC? You know, how about that? Well, you know, I think that if I know Nick Saban, he's probably wishing he could backpedal and not take that back because he was making a statement and he was trying. I think he was making a point, but he's also for several reasons. But he also, you don't specifically call out somebody, you know, and he also realized when Jimbo Fisher fired back, I think Jimbo should have said, instead of saying, you know, we didn't buy a single player. I think he should have also added that we're renting him for 4 years, but we didn't buy any. But, and also I think what Nick, and I've done a lot of games with Nick Saban as a head coach going back to when he was at Michigan State and LSU. And a lot of the coaches, including Jimbo Fisher, when you go to visit with them and he's a coordinator at LSU, after you walk in and say hello, the first question they say, they ask you about any open jobs, you know, because it's hard to work for, even though it's, you're successful and he's demanding. And you learn a lot being an assistant under Nick Saban. It is difficult. And every coordinator I've been around will tell you they're looking for a job. But here's the thing. You know, Jimbo Fisher knows how the sausage is made because he's been an assistant coach with Nick Saban in a key position when you had to go recruit at LSU and other places. He knows how it's made. And I think when Nick Saban, it's sort of like that old story about living in glass houses and that kind of, you know, you shouldn't throw. And Nick Saban probably realizes that Jimbo knows. And now Jimbo isn't going to say much unless he's really, really pushed to the brink. You know, he may use the word despicable a few times in a paragraph or two, but he's not going to specifically say what he knows because that basically indicts everybody who's doing sort of the same thing in college football or a lot are. But he knows how it's done, and he knows, you know where the skeletons are hidden and how the sausage is made. So I think Nick was probably, you know, and kudos to the SEC commissioner to say, hey, guys, enough's enough, because all you're doing is giving each other a black eye, and by by, you know, extrapolation, the conference and then college football. So let's just stop it. Let's just agree to disagree and stop this stuff, you know. And basically the commissioner called for grown-ups to take over, you know, in the room.
Have any been spotted yet in the area?
I don't think. I think that's why it would be such a great reality. Who needs Snooki when you got Saban and Jimbo Fisher in a reality? Wouldn't that be something in a reality series? The coaches of the SEC, right. Reality.
The gloves are off.
Yeah, they're off.
The wardrobe would be a little bit different.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's about it.
That's right.
Yeah, think if you got Lane Kiffin and oh, Kirby, yeah, and some of those guys involved, and they could say whatever they wanted to say. Oh, Dion. I can't wait to hear that one come out. Yeah.
You mean Coach.
Coach
Sanders.
Coach Dion. That's, yeah, right.
Let's
Coach
get a call Prime from Jerry. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jerry.
Coach Prime.
Hey, afternoon, fellas.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, you know, we heard that blood's thicker than water, and that money ain't everything, and as they say, it's way ahead of whatever's in second place. But, you know, when the Dillon brothers started racing there, I actually pulled against them because I thought they'd been given too much, too fast, and too easy. But they've been around now long enough till I've kind of started pulling for them for various reasons. But I've always liked Richard Childress. But how do you tell a grandson that's working for you that you're going to let him, you're going to keep his brother, but you're going to let him go and you're going to hire some potential hot dog to take his place? I guess in that situation, I guess the money overruled the blood and water. How do you think Richard handled that, or how that come about? Is there peace in the family still, or what? How much do you know?
Well, I think
that.
Yeah, I think it's a business, and I think that, you know, the opportunities that Austin Dillon and Ty Dillon have been given by their grandfather, going back to when they first started running the, you know, what was then the Busch series, you know, he's given and given and given, and I think, truth be known, Richard Childress would have walked away from the sport 15 years ago after we lost Dale, or 20 years ago when we lost Dale Earnhardt Sr. That sort of gutted him. It really, because they were not only a car owner and driver, they were really, really good friends. And I think Richard, he came back and he realized he had some grandsons that wanted to race, and his son Mike Dillon, you know, running the company, and his grandsons Austin and Ty racing, and both of them are talented. But there comes a point, and I think if you're Austin and you're, you know, you sort of say, okay, at what point do I get involved in managing this company so it stays in the family and help my dad, and because we need, you know, the bottom line is you got to win. You just got to win in order to have sponsors to pay the bills, to be able to afford the engines and people and parts. And I think, you know, and you got, and Austin runs well, but you got Tyler Reddick, this young kid who's just on fire. And everywhere he goes, he's running, you know, he hadn't won one yet, but Jerry, you and I both know that kid's got the world of talent and is going to win soon. So yeah, it, I don't know how you have that conversation, but I think if you're Richard Childress, you hope the fact that the young men are smart enough to come to you and say, hey, you know what? I appreciate all the opportunities, but I'm not, you know, for the sake of the company, not for my personal benefit, but for the sake of the company, we probably ought to put somebody else in my seat, and I need to step aside and maybe consider running the show or running this. I don't know if they're there as to what they're going to do or how they're going to do it, you know, that, but I think that's something that down the road, it's a tough conversation. It's like sort of like when Kyle Petty left driving for the King and went to drive for Felix Sabatis and had some success, and people were all over Kyle. Well, two things, for example. Yeah, Richard Petty, being an old school guy, he doesn't pay. He doesn't pay very well. And Kyle said, you know what, I'm able to win and be competitive, and I got a guy here who'll pay me a ton of money to come race for him, and it isn't my dad. So that's where I'm going to go. Well, you can't blame Kyle for doing that. So sometimes the families have to separate and go their separate ways.
Doc, what does the week hold for you?
You know what? It's after the last few weeks of being in Darlington and being involved with engagement, and I'm hoping to kick back and watch some baseball and stay in town this weekend. And I'd love to be able to, if the weather, you know, cook out on Monday, you know, have some family in town. I think Logan's coming back in with his new fiance, so we'll be able to visit there. I'm excited to watch the SEC and the ACC tournament. I don't think I understand the ACC tournament with all the pods and quadrants and how that works. I'm trying to find a physics major that can explain that one to me. But even if you win your pod, you can't move on, and I'm not sure how that works. Anyway, but the SEC tournament.
I heard day one, it's slide rule day.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's algorithm tournament in Charlotte. Great place to play, though, in Charlotte, but I'm not sure anybody will understand who moves on. But the SEC tournament should be fun to watch. Hoover, and I can't wait. You know, and I'm so excited for regionals and super regionals and Omaha. You know, I don't want to get the cart before the horse, you know, but I'm, you know, because we normally go to Omaha anyway. And if the Vols are there, that would be even nicer. I'll put it that way. How would that be? And you and I could have an iced tea out there.
That would be perfect. So we could just go ahead and make plans at the time that it's appropriate.
And Tony Vitale is probably sitting there with his palms pressed against both ears, so he doesn't hear any of this.
That's right. Don't jinx anything.
Don't say it. Come on, Doc. You guys, you're gonna kill it. You're killing us. Okay.
But hope you have, one, a great week where you're unpacked.
Yeah, so. I'm unpacked. And anyway, what's your week like, by the way? You got anything going?
I'm going to go back on the road, say, Wednesday.
Okay, all right.
And hopefully that'll be job one for the rest of the week.
Well, we'll stop in Hoover and don't go all the way back to Stark Vegas, as much as you want to, I'm sure. But the folks in Starkville are pretty nice, though.
They are. They could not have been nicer. And it's exactly what you hear about. And we hadn't been back since they had updated the stadium and everything around it. It's a remarkable setting. But it was really something that while they obviously were saying goodbye to a season that was very forgettable, they were still celebrating the fact that they won the championship last year, their first ever, and they were very kind. And it was interesting that Jordan Beck comes in after he was a big part of the rally that they won it on Saturday.
Right.
So it was a two-out double by Luke Lipsius, RBI single, Jordan Beck, two-run home run, Drew Gilbert gave Tennessee its eventual winning margin. And so after the game, Beck comes in and goes back out and comes back with a plate of tacos. And it's like, where did this come from? It's like, they were talking about him all game. So you go back out, and I mean, they ride you for nine innings and then feed you as soon as the game's over, regardless of who won.
Isn't that nice? That's nice. That's what sports should be about. That kind of sportsmanship. I love that.
But it was a fantastic experience. Doc, enjoy your week.
Hey, you have a great one, too.
Thanks, sure, Doc. Do appreciate it. That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local. Shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, right off Kingston Pike, just west of Westtown Mall.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.